Good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I want to invite you to stay connected for our TIN, which begins at the top of the hour, 7 o'clock p.m. Topic is a general class preview by the SCARS staff. So hopefully you'll have some questions for those staff members, and hopefully you'll join us. So I'll be in the background until the top of the hour. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I'm standing by until the top of the hour. Well, good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is SCARS, the Salt Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the SCARS organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCARS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Kilo Bravo 8 Zulu Golf Lima, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they've checked in. Information regarding our operation may be found at www.scarsvoip.com. My name is Kathy. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. This evening you'll have a SCARS staff that will be doing the program. I'm merely opening it up this evening. I live in the city of Port St. Lucie, Florida, where we currently have a temperature of about 86. It's been a stormy day, probably humid, but probably not as bad as it is further north. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask, is there any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time? If so, I ask you to come aboard. Hearing no emergency traffic, and that's always a great thing. How about anyone celebrating a birthday? Maybe last week, maybe tonight, or maybe this upcoming week that would like to come aboard so we can say happy, happy birthday. All right, hearing no birthday stations, and you all know I always say that means none of us are getting any older. This is the monthly Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. But I do want to advise everyone connected that if you've been part of this session this evening, you probably are going to be recorded because we always post it to our website as soon as possible. So remember, if you talk this evening, if you've been one of those staff members, you'll be in that recording. So the program this evening, once again, is the general class preview. Our general class begins, I believe, August the 4th, if I'm correct, and goes for about, I believe, 4 weeks. So with that, hopefully everyone up in the north is staying cool and stay inside maybe tomorrow. It's going to be rather warm. With that, I'm going to throw it over to KY6V so he can begin the program this evening. KY6V from Kilo 6 Sierra United November, are you ready to take over?
I think so. Thank you, Kathy. KY6V here. And good evening, everyone, and welcome to the SCARS monthly TIN programming. This evening we will be previewing what to expect for our upcoming general course schedule, and that is scheduled to run in August. The new question pool is out and published and became effective on July 1st of this year and will remain the official document until about July 1st, 2023. I might say that it consists of slightly over 450 questions, 10 major categories, and 35 subcategories. The license exam itself will consist of about 35 questions based on the above question pool, and you must pass 26 of the 35 questions in order to be granted the license. Let me recharge everybody's batteries here for a moment. The purpose of the preview tonight is to explain how we at SCARS run the class, what free study material we supply, and further, for you to understand your part in this course and what you need to do personally to arrive at a satisfactory level of completion. The course will start on Sunday, August the 4th, and complete on Tuesday, August the 27th. The course is 4 weeks in duration with two classes per week and will be conducted each Sunday and Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Each class lasts about an hour. The course will be held on our SCARS VOIP server and can be accessed by using Echolink node 96140, IRLP node 9614, or node 27404. Let me buy a nickel. It is important to note here that in order to complete this course in the allotted time that is necessary, it is necessary for us to assign approximately 60 questions for each class night. It is further important that each of you taking this course to review these questions assigned before the night of the class, so you can ask questions of the instructors where necessary. All necessary class material and general information, including dates, class assignments, and assigned instructors may be found on our website at www.scarsvoip.com, SCARSVOIP.com, and particularly on our homepage at the right lower part of the page entitled Outreach Corner. Let me buy one more nickel. Okay, let me go on to say that registration is now open. And to do so, please send us an email at voip@southcars.com, including your call, name, location, and email address you would like us to use for correspondence. With all of that said, we are now going to quickly review the substance of the question pool and introduce some sample questions. We're happy to have two of our eight instructors here with us this evening, and I know several other are in the audience. And the ones on the marquee are David KB9EWG and George NO70. So George, would you start things off with the first five categories, please, and then turn it to David? And while thinking about this, George, and I'll leave it up to you, as a suggestion, it might be wise to break for audio participation, or audience participation, maybe around right after you read the question for each group. Let everybody get a chance to take a shot at the answer, or just check in and say hi and that they're listening. NO70 from KY6V. Go ahead, sir.
KY6V and the South Cars TIN. What's certainly, and good evening, Gordon. Good evening to everyone who is present either this evening or via podcast for this TIN and who will be present for the upcoming general class course. Welcome to all of you. This is George. My call is NO70. I'm located in Nottingham, Maryland. And in addition to the FCC call sign of NO70, I'm proud to say my South Cars membership number is Echo 2304, and Nottingham, Maryland is located just on the Pennsylvania border, north of Baltimore along I-95. So, yes, we're in that heat that was being talked about. Let me reset. Now, I am aware that there may be some people who are hearing this TIN via the podcast, but are unlicensed and therefore not able to be present for the live class tonight. So for those of you that are coming across this on the podcast page of our website, may I say that if these are the general class questions, and if these kind of scare you a little bit too technical for you, first there is, of course, the technician level license, and there is already posted a current technician class license study series on the South Cars website. So you may take a look at that first, but of course, you can take any level of examination that you want. You're not limited to going technician, general, and extra. You can pick out either one that you feel that you could qualify for and study for and pass. And we want to wish you the very best in your quest to improve your personal knowledge of electronics and of a hobby that we all love here called amateur radio resetting. So let's get started with the subject material here. For the overall organization tonight of what we're covering, sub-element G1 of the Commission's rules will have 5 exam questions in 5 groups with 61 questions in the study pool. Now, the 5 groups, I'd like to let you know what the 5 groups are. Group A, G1A, would be General Class Control Operator Frequency Privileges and Primary and Secondary Frequency Allocations, what is meant by those phrases. Class G1B, as in Baker, would be Antenna Structure Limitations. How tall can you make your antenna? What are other FAA restrictions and limitations or requirements? Also, good engineering and good amateur practice. We want to make sure we're putting our best foot forward as we operate. Beacon operation, prohibited transmissions, and the issue of retransmitting radio signals. Let me reset. The third category, category G1C, is in Charlie, would deal with transmitter power regulations, data emission standards, and 60-meter band operation requirements. The fourth category, G1D as in Delta, covers the volunteer examiners and volunteer examiner coordinators, temporary identification, and element credit. And of course, if you'll be sitting for the general class exam, you will be relating to volunteer examiners and volunteer examiner coordinators. And the fifth category, G1E as an echo, would be control categories, repeater regulations, third-party traffic rules, ITU regions, and automatically controlled digital station. The FCC Part 97 rules and regulations, along with the ARRL band plan, are included in the course study material and should be reviewed for this section. They are posted on the SCARS website. So that is the overview of the sub-element G1 and its categories. So before I go to the sample questions, let me open it up for people to check in, say hello. Those of you that are checking in, maybe want to say hello to those who are unlicensed. And also ask if anyone would like to tell me what the ITU stands for that I mentioned in G1E as an echo category. If so, please call now. This is NO70.
Kilo 2 Hotel Alpha.
Well, good evening, Fred. Fred is our rag chew meister. He really gives us a nice place to enjoy our hobby on Saturday and Sunday evenings on South Cars, and we have a lot of fun talking about different topics and learning more from each other. Thank you for your hospitality in doing that, and welcome to you, Fred. K2HA, NO70.
Okay, very good. Yes, the ITU just had a contest this last weekend, and International Telecommunications Union, which kind of coordinates the frequencies around the world, bands, etc., rules, and I did contact a couple of those ITU stations in the contest, even though I wasn't, I was just contacting. But a lot of fun. And good evening to everybody that's listening. Ham radio is fantastic. If you're not licensed, do everything you can to get licensed. There are so many parts of it. You'll find something of interest for yourself. This is Fred, K2HA.
Well, thank you, Fred. K2HA and the South Coast TIN, July 2019, NO70. And, thank you for mentioning that, Fred. The ham radio hobby is indeed something that is more than just talking on the amateur radio. You can investigate digital voice, slow scan television, moon bounce, all sorts of things. And it's an excellent hobby to get into. So if you find one part of the hobby is maybe not quite to your liking, there's something else that you might want to look into. All right, are there any other stations that would like to come in now and say hello and let us know that you're there for tonight's TIN? Please call now. This is NO70. Well, nothing heard, and I'm sure that we will have some comments along the as the time passes here on tonight's TIN. All right, we're going to pull one sample question from the G1A category of the General Class Control Operator Frequency Privileges, Primary and Secondary Allocations, and that's G1A question 04. And it relates to FCC Rules 97.303H. The question is this, and it has four possible answers. Which of the following amateur bands is restricted to communication only on specific channels rather than allowing you just to use frequency ranges? Which is restricted to communication only on specific channels? The answers are 11 meters, 12 meters, 30 meters, or 60 meters. Would anyone like to take a answer for that? Please call now, NO70. We have a lot of studio students tonight. All right, the answer is 60 meters. What is interesting, if you look at the band plan, it would be found that the 60-meter band is the only band that has been channelized. By channelized, we mean that you have to be on a certain frequency within that frequency range. All other amateur bands, you don't have to be on certain frequencies within the band. You can choose any frequency within the band, just like sliding the scale along on a number line. But for 60 meters, you have to be on specific frequencies or channels in the 60-meter band. So the answer would be D, 60 meters. Now, when you come to the test itself, when you take it, the A, B, C, and D, the correct answer may be a different A, B, C, or D than what you see ahead of time in the study materials. So when you take the test, don't study A, B, C, or D. You will need to know the actual information or topic or technical information to be able to select the correct answer. All right, then let's move on to part to sub-element G2, and this is operating procedures. Within the sub-element G2, there are again five categories. Those five categories within sub-element G2 are G2A, phone operating procedures, USB, LSB, or upper sideband, lower sideband conventions, breaking into an ongoing contact or conversation. Yes, you can tap people on the shoulder and say you would like to join the conversation. And VOX operation. VOX stands for automatic voice operated. Category G2B is common operating courtesy, band plans, how to behave in emergencies on the radio channel, including drills and emergency communications. G2C is code or continuous wave operating procedures and procedural signals. These will be abbreviations, cue signals and other common abbreviations, and what is a full break-in resetting. Category D under G2 is the volunteer monitoring program and high frequency operations. And category G2E will be digital operating procedures. A volunteer monitoring program under category GD2 is where we do our self-policing as amateur radio operators. And don't let the word policing throw you off. We're just trying to say that in case some of us forget some good operating procedures, good amateur practice or legal operations, someone will help us out, and that gets us out of trouble. And it's a gentle lady's hobby. It is an absolute delight to be in compared to what you may hear on some other frequencies. So we're a family-oriented service. Let me reset. So out of those five categories under sub-element G2 operating procedures, a sample question would be G2 category A, the phone operating procedures and so forth. Question 01 is selected. Which sideband is most commonly used for voice communications on frequencies of 14 megahertz or higher? Your choices are four. First one would be upper sideband. Second choice, lower sideband. Third choice, vestigial sideband. And fourth choice, double sideband. So that's upper, lower, vestigial, or double. Which of those would be used for voice communications of frequencies of 14 megahertz or higher? Hope someone can help me out with the answer to this. Please call now. This is N070.
Alpha Charlie 5, United Bravo.
Alpha Charlie 5, United Bravo, N070. Well, good evening. Thank you for being here tonight. Yes, please, what would be you, what say you as to be the best answer here, please, sir? And if you could, for those that are listening to the podcast, tell us your name and location, please. AC5UB, N070. Over.
Upper sideband. Name is Curtis, located in Junction City, Kansas. AC5UB.
Well, Curtis, we'll have to give you the biggest lollipop for the first answer tonight. Yes, upper sideband is the correct answer. I was kidding a friend this week about these big, giant rainbow swirl lollipops and everything. So anyway, we'll have to do a virtual transmission of a lollipop over. Virtual means it's all an electronic lollipop, okay? Thank you, Curtis. Really good to have that. And you're absolutely correct. The rule of thumb here is that everything from 20 meters and up uses upper sideband. 14 megahertz is in 20 meters. And everything below 20 meters is lower sideband. That's the answer for G2A1 about which sideband is most commonly used for voice communications on frequencies of 14 megahertz or higher. Let me reset, please. For those of you listening to the podcast tonight, this is the South Cars Thursday Night Information Network, July 2019, and we are taking a look ahead of the upcoming South Cars General Class License course to give you a bit of a sample and flavor of what will be covered in that course running from August 4th to August the 27th on South Cars. And we hope that as you look for passing the general class test, you'll find some help here as well. All right, with that, let me then move on to sub-element G3 for the next question tonight. Sub-element G3 addresses topics regarding radio wave propagation. Of course, radio wave propagation simply means as our ham radio transmission, the RF wave, goes out, it's going to get bounced around by different things like the ionospheric layer, May have troposphere ducting. There are a lot of nice things that happen to radio waves that can make the hobby very interesting. You never know what you may hear, part of the fun, and it's legal for you to take advantage of those gifts and for our communications. That's a great thing about ham radio. That being said, sub-element G3 has three major topics in it: sunspots and solar radiation, ionospheric disturbances and propagation forecasting and indices are a part of G3A. The next one, G3B, would be maximum usable frequency, lowest usable frequency, and propagation topics. And G3C is ionospheric layers, critical angle and frequency of the RF wave, HF or high frequency scatter, and near vertical incidence sky wave. Let me say that again a little more plainly. Near vertical incidence sky wave. We're going to take questions G3A01 as a sample question from this sub-element G3 group. Question G3A01 asks, what is the significance of the sunspot number about HF propagation? Again, HF means high frequency. So question is, what is the significance of the sunspot number about HF propagation? Answer A choice is higher sunspot numbers generally indicate a greater probability of good propagation at higher frequencies. Choice B is lower sunspot numbers generally indicate a greater probability of sporadic E propagation. Choice C is a zero sunspot number indicates that radio propagation is not possible on any band. And choice D is a zero sunspot number indicates undisturbed conditions. Let me open it up for anyone to help me out with the answer to this question, please. This is the South Bars TIN, and I'm looking for any help on this question. This is NL70. Go ahead.
Oh, this is K2HA.
Thank you, Fred. K2HA, thank you for filling us in with G3A01. Go ahead, K2HA on the South Bars TIN, NL70. Over to you.
Well, we are presently in the dregs in the bottom of the sunspot cycle right now. The lowest we've had in years. The sunspot cycle usually runs around 11 years. And that's why so many digital communications are going on now, weak signal digital communications. And they're very successful. So the answer is A. Higher sunspot numbers generally indicate a greater probability of good propagation at higher frequencies.
K2HA and the South Parts TIN and visitors via podcast, NO70. And Fred is absolutely correct. The higher sunspot numbers do generally indicate a greater probability of good propagation at higher frequencies. Now, there's one choice I read which I do want to highlight here. Answer C, which is incorrect, made the assertion that a zero sunspot number would indicate that radio propagation is not possible on any band. I'd like to clarify a little bit about that. That is incorrect. You can have zero sunspots and still communicate by radio wave propagation. The sunspots may help with some long distance and communications or with more unpredictable communications, but you can still have some radio wave propagation even with no sunspots present. The topic of sunspot numbers is an interesting subject. You will learn, if you want to work long distances at the higher frequency, though, that the sunspots do need to be in your favor. So that will help with communications, but again, you're not blocked if there are no sunspots. So, that being said, the next sub-element of G4 deals with amateur radio practices. and there will be 5 exam questions in 5 groups out of 67 questions possible on the general class exam when you take it. The 5 categories of sub-element G4 will be station operation and setup, G4B, testing and monitoring equipment and a two-tone test, G4C, interference to consumer electronics, grounding and DSP, G4D, speech processors, S-meters, and sideband operation near band edges, very important topic, and G4E, HF, mobile radio installations, and alternative energy source operations. That's a topic close to my heart here in the installation in Nottingham, Maryland. All right, so with that being said, let's move on to the sample question that's being asked. The question is this: what is the purpose of the notch filter found on many high-frequency transceivers? Question G4A01. What is the purpose of the notch filter found on many HF transceivers? The choices are to restrict the transmitter voice bandwidth. Choice B, to reduce interference from carriers in the receiver passband. Choice C, to eliminate receiver interference from impulse noise sources. And choice D, to enhance the reception of a specific frequency on a crowded band. Now, I think that's going to take probably a couple of readings when you see that on the test, but it's a fairly simple question under all. That said, I'm going to ask for help from the people in the TI tonight for the correct answer to G4A01. What is the purpose of the notch filter found on many HF transceivers? Please call now. This is N070. Well, nothing heard. All right, so let me take a stab myself with this one. The purpose of the notch filter is to reduce interference from carriers in the receiver passband. Now, what is a receiver passband? That is where you have adjusted the filter so you're listening to a slice of the band. That's the width of the passband that you tuned in. And the notch filter will allow you then to focus your attention where a signal is more easily understood, because it becomes the loudest signal as you adjust that little notch of your received frequency, and you can hear the station better. So said in a different way, this filter narrows the bandwidth to reduce or eliminate the unwanted signals close to your operating frequency. You may be trying to talk with one station and there are a couple others within that passband, and you need to hear better the one you're talking to. That is a very effective purpose of the notch filter. With that, let's go into sub-element G5, electrical principles. That will have 3 exam questions, 3 groups, and a total of possible 43 questions to choose from that could show up on your general class exam. Sub-element G5 deals with electrical principles. Here we will have, for sub-element G5, 3 exam questions, 3 groups, 43 questions. G5A is reactance, inductance, capacitance, impedance, and impedance matching. G5B is the decibel, current, and voltage dividers, and electrical power. And G5C is resistors, capacitors, and inductors in series and parallel, and also transformers. So for those of you that are joining us by podcast, as well as those by the TIN, you'll recognize this as dealing with the basics of electronics and electrical circuits that we build and construct to be able to have fun with our hobby and even build special purpose projects, which may be a part of what we do in the air. A lot of flexibility in the hobby here. Let me reset. Our sample question from sub-element G5 tonight is G5A question 01. And the question is, what is impedance? Of all those topics that I mentioned to you, what is impedance? The possible answers are the electric charge stored by a capacitor. Possible answer B is the inverse of resistance. That impedance might be considered the inverse of resistance. Answer C, the opposition to the flow of current in an alternating current or AC circuit. And question D, the force of repulsion between two similar electric fields. So those are the four options to question G5A01. Resetting. Now, for those of you on the podcast that heard that those tones in the background, Echolink has a feature which you will be able to use as a licensed amateur operator that will sound a little pop-up or alert if a station that you are looking for or commonly speak with becomes available on the air. You can actually have Echolink let you know about that. So that's what you heard during that last part, that last question. Thank you for allowing me to have that working here. All right, so let me ask again, what is impedance? And I've given you the four choices. Let me open it up for anyone on the TIN tonight to help me with the answer. This is the 070. Well, you know, I'm going to try something here. One of the Elmers that's helped me with a lot of ham radio topics and everything is Chief W4RFJ. Now, I know he's back there backing up Gordon KY6V, and maybe he might be by his operating position, or he might be a little farther away, but let's see if I can pull him out of the woodwork. W4FJ, are you able to help me understand impedance? W4FJ, NO70, over.
Yeah, what's the question there, W4RFJ?
Question is G5A01, what is impedance? And I'm wondering if you can help me out with the definition. That's question G5A01, over.
Okay, I guess, I'm sorry I kind of haven't been following along, but do you want my answer, or do you want the generic answer that I'm supposed to give? Over.
Well, you are a valuable Elmer to me, and I wanted the people on the TIN to understand what an Elmer is also. So I'm going to ask you for both, because you have a way of helping me to understand things, and I would like for people who are attending the TIN to see how hams help each other and what an Elmer does. So please give me both, Chief. W4FJ on the South Guard's TIN, NO70, over.
All right, real quick, George, I apologize. I've been listening but not listening. I've been doing some research of my own. What is impedance? Okay, well, the answer to this question is it's the opposition to the flow of current in an AC circuit, which is considered an alternating current. Now, what people don't understand is that when you have an alternating current, there's different devices such as capacitors, coils, resistors, and the wire itself. The resistors have an opposition to current flow both in AC and DC, but it's considered what we call pure resistance. What happens is with this alternating current reacting to a coil or a capacitor, the opposition of current flow, or the impedance, which is another word for resistance, is actually developed from that opposition of the reactance of those devices, the coils and capacitors. So, to put this in simple terms, when you're looking at impedance, it is the opposition of current flow in an AC circuit. So, and because of that AC circuit, there are components that provide reactants, and that reactant is in opposition to current flow in an AC circuit, and it's also measured in ohms. That's what makes it so confusing. But to make a long story short and a short story longer, impedance is the combination of reactance and pure resistance on an alternating current type of circuit. Does that make sense? Over.
Thank you, Chief. It does. W4FJ and the South Cars TIN. Looking forward to the general class course. This is George N070. And thank you, Chief, one of my valuable Elmers. And as you can see, there are people available to you who really know this stuff that can talk you through it as well, which is a great part of our ham radio hobby. So for those of you who are listening on podcast, whether licensed or unlicensed, please know you have people who are have your back all 100% to help you out. Thank you. So let me capitalize on one thing that Chief said, because as with so much in engineering and electronics, you can calculate numbers and values. So it said slightly differently here, the total opposition to alternating current by an electrical circuit, which would be composed of the resistors, capacitors, coils, inductors, is equal to the square root of the sum of the squares of the resistance and reactance of the circuit. Okay, so it's the you take the square root of a sum of squares of resistance and reactance of the circuit, and then the result is labeled with a symbol of Z, and it is expressed in ohms, which, as Chief said, makes it a little confusing because resistance is also measured in ohms. Okay, well, as you can tell, in impedance, inductance, reactance, those are all things dealing with electrical principles. There are three groups and 43 questions that they can ask you on the general class test. Thank you very much, Chief. I appreciate your helping me demonstrate Elmer's and ham radio willingness to help. I appreciate that so very much. All right. With that, I am at the end of my section for this. Let me open it up for any questions of what we have covered so far before I turn it over to Tibby9EWG, Dave, for the rest of this. So any other thoughts, fill-ins, please do call with any thoughts or your experiences. This is the South Guards TIN, and looking for any comments before we move on. Please call now. This is NO70.
6, Victor.
Well, good evening, Gordon, and thank you for coming back in. KY6V, NO70.
Well, thank you, sir. I just wanted to throw my hat in the ring. I think that Chief hit it spot on your last question on impedance. And I suspect that some of the guys and gals are sitting back, well, why the heck do I have to know this? And from a practical standpoint, it's important to, in some of the things that you do all the time as a ham radio operator, you have an antenna that is distributing a certain impedance. You have a transmitter that is distributing a certain impedance. You want those impedances to match, because if the impedance of the antenna is holding off the current to whatever degree that difference in impedance may be, you're lacking power going to the antenna and therefore radiation. So it's very important to know a little bit about this. The other example I would use is you plug in a microphone, okay? What is the impedance of the microphone compared to the impedance of the audio circuit that you're plugging into? If one is low and one is high, what do you do? other than get yourself into trouble until you get out of it. Go ahead, George, KY6V, over.
Well, thank you, Gordon. I'm sure a lot of people, of our people that may be thinking about general class licenses, have been in a spot where they saw at recording studios or radio and TV broadcast stations where they have the long microphone cables, and then they also have short microphone cables, and the tinny sound that come out too with a mismatch of impedance on audio. Gordon, please let me ask you a question about the radio impedance that you mentioned about the antenna and transmitter matching. Is that related to standing waves on between the antenna and being reflected back to the transmitter? And if so, can enough energy, if it's poorly matched on impedance, be reflected back so that you would damage your transmitter equipment? Or is that reflected power a different topic? Maybe you could help us understand a little more about impedance and SWR. KY6B, NO70.
Yeah, okay. Well, I don't want to tie the net up here too long, but let me say this about that. If you have standing waves on your transmission line, that is your feed line between the transmitter and the antenna, it is because you have an impedance mismatch. If the impedance mismatch is high, it does have the possibility, to answer your question, to damage the transmitter. But in most of the commercial radios that you will be involved in today, that you buy off the shelf, have built-in safety circuits that if they see a high impedance at the output of the output amplifier circuit of that transmitter, they will start reducing power. And it keeps the equipment from getting into trouble. I would lead everybody to our website at southcars.com and take a look at our live section, which is on the top of the left-hand sidebar of our homepage. And that question was put in there to give some stimulation to the general course that's coming up. And that's the question they're asking. What happens when this happens when you do this and do that regarding SWR? Go ahead, George, KY6V.
Thank you, Gordon. Yes, well, I appreciate the you're allowing me to take the time to ask that question, because it sure seems, given how much we treasure our equipment, so thanks for that time and that information and update on modern equipment capabilities. So with that, it has been my honor and my pleasure to have been invited to be here as a part of your resources for this part of the TIN tonight, and you have another very worthy person coming up to help with others tonight. So I'm going to turn it back to KY6V as our net control station for tonight, and then he will provide an introduction and get you started on the second half of tonight. KY6V, thanks to everyone again. 7-3, this is NO70. Over.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sherwood Forrest. Great job. David, you're up and ready to go. Put Wisconsin on the marquee. KB9EWG from KY6V.
Well, thank you there, Gordon, KY6V. Good evening to you, and good evening to all on South Cars. First of all, fine job, George, on your half of the show. And outstanding answer there to Chief also. Good evening, all. This is KB9EWG, David in La Crosse, Wisconsin. My South Car's number is Echo 2289, where it's currently 87 degrees, sunny, and chance of thunderstorms. So, good evening to all. course, this is the second half, and we're continuing on with the general class outreach sampler or preview show here on the Thursday Information Net. And before I move on to my first topic here, anybody got any questions or check-ins at this time? If so, I'll stand by. Then if not, I'll continue on here. KB9EWG.
Yeah, VK2DY. I'll check in.
Well, good evening to you there, Robert, VK2DY. And any comments here before I move on with the show here?
KB9EWG, this is VK2DY. Robert, in metropolitan Sydney, it was a cold morning this morning. I had this great wipe off the windshield again this morning. So we got down near freezing. It's windy down here. Just wanted to say thank you for putting on this course, and I think it's very, very useful and very, very good. And when the bands are good, connections between Australia here and the United States are really happening. And so I think you can, you know, it's really a fascinating hobby as to how all these signals and communications get around the world and around the country. So I hope everyone's encouraged and gets out there and gets on HF, because it's a fun place to be. VK2DY, back to you.
Well, fantastic, Robert. Well, thank you. Good evening to you there. Well, good morning, actually. I think it's on your end there. But anyways, real good. And yes, HF is a lot of fun. I enjoy it myself. I've worked Australia many times. Of course, earned my DRCC on HF there. So anyways, I'm going to move on. We are going to move on to sub-element Gulf 6, G6, which is circuit components. There are two exam questions and two groups, and there's a total of 28 questions in the group, but there will be two questions on your general class exam. Okay, the first group would be G6 Alpha, resistors, capacitors, inductors, rectifiers, solid state, diodes and transistors, vacuum tubes, and batteries. The second group, of course, would be Gulf 6 Bravo, G6B, which is analog and digital integrated circuits, ICs, microprocessors, memory I/O devices or input-output devices, microwave ICs, MMICs, display devices, and connectors, and as well as ferrite cores. Let me grab a nickel here. Okay, the sample question that they're giving in this group is going to be Gulf 6 Alpha 06 Bravo. Which of the following is a reason not to use a wire wound resistors in an RF circuit? Which of the following is a reason not to use a wire wound resistor in an RF circuit? The possible answers are: the resistor's tolerance value would not be adequate for such circuit. Next possible answer would be the resistor's inductance could make the circuit performance unpredictable. The third choice would be the resistor could overheat. And the fourth choice would be the resistor's internal capacitance would detune the circuit. And I'm not giving the ABCDs because you never know which letter they're going to assign to the answer on the test there. So, but one of the four choices is correct. Does anybody want to try to answer before I read the correct answer?
N070,
go ahead.
Well, I'm going to go with what I learned from Chief earlier and say that the correct answer about a reason not to use wire wound resistors in an RF circuit is because the resistor's inductance could make the circuit performance unpredictable. As Chief mentioned, if you have coils, capacitors, and so forth, that when the field is set up with something like coils, which is what would be included in a wire-wound resistor, then that's going to introduce inductance. And that presence of inductance when you're trying to get just resistance could make the circuit performance unpredictable. So that would be my guess, and I pretty confident that Chief knows what he's talking about. back to you, David. KB90WG, NO70, over.
Well, I would place my bet on Chief also. So, yes, and that was the correct answer. Inductance is that property of a circuit by which a change in current induces by electromagnetic induction, an electromotive force symbol L. So that would be the correct answer. Okay, I will move on to sub-element G7, which is practical circuits. There would be 3 exam questions on the general test out of a possible 40 questions in week 4 there. And the 3 possible questions, or three questions would be consist of G7A was power supplies schematic symbols, G7B, Bravo, was digital circuits, amplifiers, and oscillators, and G7 Charlie, receivers, transmitters, filters, and oscillators. And the sample question for would be G7A01B. What useful features of the power supply bleeder resistor provide? And the possible answers would be, it acts as a fuse for excess voltage. The next possible answer would be, it ensures that the filter capacitors are discharged when power is removed. The third possible answer would be, it removes shock hazards from the induction coils. And the fourth possible answer would be, it eliminates ground loop current. Does anybody want to try for the possible correct answer on this question here? KB9EWG.
Of course. This is K2HA.
Well, good evening to you there, Fred, K2HA. And your answer, bees, please.
Well, having experienced electricity send me across the room, it discharges the filter capacitors. I think that's the one. I don't remember the exact wording, but that would be the one you need.
And yes, that would be correct. It ensures that the filter capacitors are discharged when power is removed. When you turn off the power to an AC to a power supply that does not use a bleeder resistor, the capacitor maintains a charge that can cause shock to you and others that touch these components. And an interesting little note there, my mother tells me stories about how she used to work in a TV factory, and one of her jobs was actually discharging the capacitors on the TVs as they were working on them. And she told me stories about her getting knocked down a few times by those capacitors being discharged. Okay, let me buy a nickel here, and I'll move on to sub-element G8. Okay, continuing on, this is KB9EWG with the Thursday Information Net on South Cars. Sub-element G8, Gulf 8, is signals and emissions. There are 3 exam questions and 3 groups, a total of 38 questions in the pool. Okay, Gulf 8 Alpha, carriers and modulation, AM, FM, single sideband modulation, envelope, digital modulation and overmodulation, Gulf 8 Bravo, frequency mixing, multiplication, bandwidth and various modes, deviation, duty cycle and intermodulation, and Gulf 8 Charlie, digital emission modes. And the sample question for this would be Gulf 8 Alpha 08 Delta. Which of the following is an effective overmodulation? A, insufficient audio. B, insufficient bandwidth. C, frequency drift. Or D, excessive bandwidth. And once again, remember that the letters could be mixed up on the exam, so don't go by letter numbers. Anybody want to try for an answer on this question here? KB9EWG.
Everybody's so bashful. K2HA here.
Yes, K2HA, go ahead.
It is definitely very frustrating to be working the HF bands, and somebody has too much over-modulation and just splattering all over the place and taking up excessive bandwidth. And so that should be the answer.
And, of course, you are correct. Over-modulation is something to avoid. It generally causes a distorted, unpleasant sound on your signal and causes the receiving station's difficulty in understanding what you are trying to say. Something that we all seem to run into occasionally, even here on VoIP. So it is something to try to avoid here. Okay, now we move on to a sub-element Gulf 9. Antennas and feed lines. There's four exam questions, four groups, out of a possible 54 questions. So there's Gulf 9 Alpha, which is antenna feed lines, characteristic impedance, and attenuation, SWR calculation, measurement, and effects of matching networks. Gulf 9B is basic antennas. Gulf 9C is directional antennas, and Gulf 9D, Delta, is specialized antennas. And the sample question for this is, which of the following fact, which, okay, the sample question is, first of all, Gulf 9 Alpha 01 Alpha. Which of the following factors determines the characteristic impedance of a parallel conductor antenna feed line? Let me reset here. The four possible answers are A, the distance between the centers of the conductors and the radius of the conductors. The second possible answer would be the distance between the centers of the conductor and the length of the line. Third possible answer would be the radius of the conductors and the frequency of the signal. And the fourth possible answer would be the frequency of the signal and the length of the line. Anybody care to try a guess at this answer here? KB90WG.
Okay, K2HA.
K2HA, go ahead with your answer.
Okay, so they're asking about the characteristic impedance. They're not asking about the frequency. And so the impedance would be changed by the distance. The distance between the centers of the conductors and the radius of the conductors. And the larger the radius, you get more bang for your buck, but it does affect the impedance also. This is Fred, K2HA.
Yep, that is correct. This is normally called open wire transmission line, normally, but not always. You will find these in 300, 450, and 600 ohm configurations. Okay, we'll move on to sub-element G0, which is electrical and RF safety. There's two exam questions, two groups out of a possible 25 questions. So is Gulf 0A, RF safety principles, rules, and guidelines, routine station evaluation, and Gulf 0B, station safety, and electrical shock safety grounding, fusing, interlocks, wiring, and antenna tower safety. And sample question, Gulf 0 Alpha 03. How can you determine that your station complies with FCC RF exposure regulations? The four possible answers are A, the calculation based on FCC OET Bulletin 65, Oscar Echo Tango Bulletin 65. B, by calculation of based on computer modeling. C, by measurement of field strength using a calibrated equipment. or D, all of these choices are correct? Anybody try to take a guess at this one?
Well, I hate to answer all the questions, but why not? This is K2HA.
Okay, go ahead there, Fred.
Well, the first thing you got to remember is to be smart. And RF exposure, there are certain things to do, but there's a whole long list besides these. The choices are all correct, so the answer is D. Okay, thank you. This is K2HA.
Okay, and I also like to add that it is highly recommended by your instructors to first become familiar with FCC Oscar Echo Tango Bulletin Number 65. That was before mentioned in the question there. Well, that will bring us up to the end of this session here. So I'm going to turn it back to the captain, KY6D, and I'll say thank you all. This is KB9EWG. Over to you, Gordon. It's been fun doing the TIN. Your turn, Gordon, KY6B from KB9EWG.
Well, I think we're about there. Thank you, David. And thank you, everybody, KY6V. We are now in about 11 minutes after the second hour, so we're going to wind it up very, very shortly. I think the only comments that I would like to make is to tell those of you who are interested in taking the course with us to take a look at our course page on our website that's in the outreach corner under the general class marquee. You'll find that the study material is fairly encompassing. I think there's currently about 7 different listings to look at on the study material. It starts off with a promotional flyer that we use for advertising. I would like to suggest that anybody that thinks they have some friends or maybe radio club members that might be interested in the course, it's a printable document. Just print off a copy and hand it to them or hang it on the flagpole or something for people to take a look at. Let me buy a nickel here. And the study guide goes on and talks about there's a complete a listing if you want to download from there the question pool that is now current as of July the 1st that we'll be using for the course. There's the necessary schematics that will be needed for you to peruse to answer some of the questions that are in the pool. There's a copy of FCC Part 97's rules and regulations. We recommend very highly that at some point in the game you read that thing in its entirety at least once so you know what the rules of the game are. One more nickel here. Okay. And then we suggest we have a BandPan plan posted there that I suggest you copy and file away for use. Very handy tool. We've got a pie chart for Ohm's Law, figuring out the resistance and current and electricity, the voltage, power formulas, and so on and so forth. That's something you ought to keep around all the time. You never know when you're going to need it. Just keep it in a file someplace. And then we also direct you to where you can take practice tests in order to sharpen your thinking before you sit down and take the actual exam. And that's very important. We recommend that very, very highly. So, any other questions here? Registration's open. Send any registration to VOIP@southcars.com. We'd be very happy to get you enrolled. We need a little bit of information. We need your name, your location. We need a, and your call sign, obviously. We need an email address for correspondence, et cetera, et cetera. But that's all explained on the website material. Let me buy one more nickel. So with that, let me take a final check-in from anybody out there. Any comments? Any questions? Before we close this down for the evening. KY6V, call now, please.
Yes, K2HA.
Yes, sir, there, Professor. Did you listen to the plug that I threw on the question that you posted on the live section? Go ahead, Fred.
Well, thank you for doing that, sir. And could you share any of the experience or responses for those who have taken the course before? Over to you, Gordon. This is K2HA.
Well, it's all been very positive, Fred. We started our first class sessions here with South Cars back about late 2009, 2010 at any rate. So we've run an awful lot of courses. We've passed through an awful lot of people. And for the most part, it has been very, very successful. We don't always get the reports back from our students as to whether they did indeed take the test and did they pass it type thing. But from those that we hear of are very thrilled and happy with the experience that we put them through before they took the test. So I guess the only answer that I can give to you is that the flavor and the understanding that we have is it's been very positive. Over.
Okay. Thank you very much for your response. And repetition, study, and asking questions. So I encourage anybody that's listening that wants to take the course to look over the questions in advance. If you don't completely understand why something is, bring it to the class, and we'll explain it to you. Okay, this is Fred, K2HA.
Okay. Thank you very much for that, Fred. Any other comments before we close, please? KY6V.
NO70.
I think I've heard you before. Nice job, George. Go ahead.
Well, Gordon, nice job to South Cars and you and our net manager, Kathy, all of the boss of all of us, NCSs, and everyone else. I want to capitalize on what Fred was saying and we've been saying. There are a lot of good people who are good Elmers, and Elmer means someone who will help you out with understanding parts of the hobby, and this is a marvelous hobby. Lots of things can be said about it. The romantic nights of pointing a walkie-talkie or a antenna at the big moon and doing moon bounce or standing on the edge of the seashore and hearing a maritime station and communicating out, and there's more to it than just sitting in a shack as well. However, for those of our visitors who are listening by podcast who may not have EchoLink available yet to them, Fred was mentioning the study and repetition and so forth. May I suggest another resource as well? That's going to be checking your local city or town for other ham radio operators who are located close to you, and open a dialogue with them. You'd be surprised how helpful they may be. Another resource, of course, is your local library. And included with your local library will be the bookmobile. Let me reset. The reason why I say there might be a bookmobile, let's say that it's hard for you to get to the library for some reason. We do have a lot of hams who have challenges with transportation for reasons that would be widespread. Maybe no transportation available. Cars may not have parking places in urban areas and so forth. You know, it's amazing. The bookmobiles will pull up into their assigned locations and hand you books that they brought from the library. All you have to do is go online to the website and request one and let them know which one that you want to read. And then you can have that delivered and make that a part of your study material as well. Of course, the study material on the South Cars website is vast and should help you prepare as well. So, we ham radio operators tend to be creative and ingenious. So those are a couple of other resources that might be considered. And I want to thank all the Elmers that I've had and encourage each of those pursuing this course to look for your Elmers as well. Thank you, Gordon, for letting me add in these thoughts. KY6V on the South Cars TIN, NL70.
Well, thank you, George. And I would add to that, don't forget your computer, guys and gals. You know, that search engine is a marvelous device. And I would wager a guess just about all the time, if you have a particular question and you search that question or that subject matter, you'll just get reams and reams of stuff available for you to search through, read, and try to understand. So there's a lot of things going on. But as George mentioned, we are very happy to have a very strong membership of some very talented people that have been hams for eons, number one. Number two, they have walked the walk. They've worn the moccasins. They know what they're talking about. A lot of them are engineers, commercial electronic type guys, IT professionals, so on and so forth. So all you have to do is bounce onto this website and say, I've got a question that's bothering me. Can somebody answer it? You don't have to give the question right then. Just wait for a reply. And somebody will come back to you and say, well, let's hear your question. And they'll either answer it for you or they will direct you to one of these Elmer types that both George and I and some of the others have referred to. Okay, last call for alcohol. The fat lady's about ready to sing. Anybody else, please? Okay, thanks for coming by. Again, the class will be running from August the 4th through August the 27th. First class night will be Sunday, August the 4th. Please pre-register if you'd like to be part of the course. And that information for registration is on our website. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming by. We'll see you the next time we hear you on the server. KY6V and the TIN is now closed, kaput, gone, and moving everything back to normal use and abuse. KY6V clear. Bye-bye.